What You Missed on the Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lynn. Only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Influence Women on Boards, our very special series. In Singapore, only 1 in 9 listed board seats are filled by women. Research shows that our country is still trailing many other countries in terms of female representation on boards. The Diversity Action Committee has adopted an escalating set of targets to raise women's share of board seats over the next 13 years, which, if met, could lead women to filling 459 more board seats by 2020 than they currently occupy. But for today, I thought we'd meet Stephanie Yuen Thieu, hear her experience of sitting on a variety of different boards, including nonprofit boards. Stephanie has been picked as one of the 30 leaders and entrepreneurs in Asia to watch by Asia Law Portal publication. She is joint managing partner of TSMP Law Corporation. Outside of practice, she served as board director or advisor to nonprofit organizations for over a decade, and it all started at Dover Park Hospice, and you've then moved on to the Smile Mission, and you are currently board director for Community Foundation of Singapore. First up, Stephanie, tell us how volunteering on nonprofit boards started with a conversation.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to take the CTE on a Thursday evening. That's always fun. Thank you very
much. Thanks for the effort. Yeah. Appreciate it.
So my great aunt, whom I was principal caregiver for, was dying from cancer, and we put her in Dover Park Hospice because she didn't want to be by herself at home. We were working, of course, and she passed away then. They took really great care of her, and she didn't want to be alone when she died. So one day when I met Dr. Seet Ai Mee, who was the founder of Dover Park Hospice, I said to her, "Hi, Auntie Ai Mee, thanks very much. My great aunt died in your hospice care. If there's anything I can do, let me know." And I thought she was going to hit me up to buy a table at the next gala dinner. She called me a couple of weeks later and said, "Young one, it is time. You will step up now."
Wow.
And when somebody says that, you've got no choice but to do what it takes. They got me on the board at first as just a member. Mm-hmm. After a year, they said, "Come and hit the fundraising committee." Now, this is my background. I have never raised any money for a building fund. I have always evaded doing rag and flag. I've never carried a tin can onto the street to raise money on Saturdays. I'm useless at this kind of thing. I panicked. But you do what you have to do, and when you find a cause that you believe in, and especially one that's actually touched your life, you step up, or otherwise you just can't consider yourself a person. So that's what I did.
My goodness. So, you know, raising money in itself is hard enough.
It's a terrible job.
Raising money for a hospice when there is a lot of fear, superstition, yeah, misunderstanding.
So, interesting story. Dover Park Hospice is named Dover Park Hospice because originally it was meant to be sited at Dover Park. But this was more than 20 years ago. I think people were then very superstitious, and the people living near where the hospice was supposed to be were very upset about the idea of there being a death house near them. And so they could never set it up at Dover Park. And so it's set up in Jalan Tan Tock Seng, near the medical cluster, which is great because, you know, they can be well served with the hospitals nearby. But that's an interesting story. And when I first went in, mm-hmm, the year that I took over as fundraising chairman was the global financial crisis. And every year before that, they'd raised lots of money by having a gala dinner. And I thought, in a year when bankers and businessmen are throwing themselves off buildings, committing suicide because, you know, they've lost so much in the stock market, they can't face their children and their wives, it would be obscene for us to, you know, pay money and have a gala dinner and a big splashy party. So we said, let's do something different. Let's raise awareness for the cause. Let's break the superstition around supporting people dying. Because people, when you ask them for money, will say, "Look, why don't I support the youth?" All right? The youth have a hope for the future. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're helping somebody die, why don't you just give them morphine, painkillers, let them go quietly and painlessly into the night? And they don't realize that how somebody dies and how they spend their last days really matters to them and to their families. And that was a message we wanted to get out there. So what we did was we rallied the schools, and we thought, don't let me talk about it. Don't let a 40-year-old woman talk about it. Don't let a 50-year-old woman with, an aging parent talk about it, because then the aging parent's going to think that you're trying to get rid of me. Let the grandchildren talk about it. Let them say, "Grandpa, I want to make sure that every day of yours is going to be a day well spent. I want to be there with you at the end, and I want you to be surrounded by family and love and greenery." And so that's what we did. We did a sunflower walk. We didn't raise a lot of money with it. We raised some awareness. We got the whole family to show up. Everybody wore sunflowers in their hair. It was lovely. And I think it changed things. It changed how the public thought about things. Now, I don't want to credit us completely, but I do want to say that I do believe that there was a turning point for Singapore, because nowadays when you talk about CSR, how you die is an important part of that conversation. Step down care is an important part of that conversation. Previously, the Chinese were very pantang about this, and so they didn't want to talk about dying and they didn't want to give money towards dying. So it's just one of those things. I'm so proud that Singapore has turned the corner on this.
Tremendous story. Incredible. Just wow. In terms of NGOs, do you think that by and large this is fatigue when it comes to giving to good causes in Singapore? And what are some of the common challenges do you think they face when it comes to fundraising?
I think that Singaporeans have a lot of money and they have a really big heart. I think the fatigue comes from doing the same thing over and over again, having a gala dinner, which is really boring. When I first took over, the people who had previously organized some gala dinners said they didn't want to talk about the cause and they didn't want to show a corporate video because they said, my friends are coming to have a good time and have a party and we don't want to talk about death. And I really didn't feel that that was the right way to approach fundraising. Yeah. I think it should always be about the cause. It should be humanizing you should humanize the people that you're dealing with. Don't talk about helping people die. Tell the stories about the people who really treasured their last days and for whom the family felt that it made a difference. Make that the story, the heartbeat of what you're doing. And then I don't think it's a problem. Once you make it real, secondly, I think you also have to have skin in the game, right? You can't run a charity dinner and just show up in a $8,000 couture gown and not know who you're helping and not be hands-on in what you're doing. So I think that that's very important as well. I was on the Smile Mission, and that's even more challenging to raise money for. We give free cleft palate and cleft lip reconstruction to people, and that's in the region. So a lot of Singaporeans will say, hey, I've got a lot of charities in Singapore that need my help. Why am I giving money outside the country? Now, when you actually go on a mission yourself and you help people whose families have walked for 5 days just to bring their kid to the only city in the country that has got anesthesia and surgeons, and we've flown a whole bunch of surgeons and nurses over there to do this for them, that's really very heartwarming. And I think walking the talk really makes a difference. And when people know that it's a cause that you have sunk your own money and your own time in, really to roll up your sleeves and serve, they're happy to support that. Sometimes they support the cause because they believe in it. Sometimes they support their friend who's supporting the cause. And, you know, I find that in the millennial generation, they walk the talk before the rest of us, and that's fantastic. I really admire that about this new generation.
So you've sat on many different boards over last 10 years,
yes.
Many nonprofits as well. Do you think many people on these boards have these stymied ideas of, you know, this is what we need to do in order to raise money, and that sort of fresh creative ideas? Or what is needed, do you think, in terms of lifeblood on these boards?
I think it's important to get new people, and I think diversity is the thing. And I don't just mean gender diversity. I think we need some youth. We need fresh ideas. We need people who, you know, from the time that they're in university, say, I'm going to take a few months on, I'm going to build a school in Chiang Mai, I'm going to go, you know, teach children in Chiang Mai. To one of my colleagues, her name is Nadia, she's going to kill me for mentioning her here, but when she was in university, she and her friends would go to Chiang Mai, and then they basically adopted a village, and every year on her own dime, she and her family go back there and they teach the kids, and they bring supplies for the kids. There's no charity around that. They just do it. This generation is amazing. We should be co-opting them. We shouldn't just be saying, let's get the rich guys who've made their money to come on board because they can cut a big check, because those guys, they do have some fatigue, right? I think the other thing that we should be thinking about is legacy planning. We should be talking to the older generation and saying, you've made your money, you've put your money in charities, that's great, we appreciate that. Shouldn't you be teaching your next generation what giving is about and what legacy is about? And when they start looking at it like that, when they start asking themselves, what am I going to leave behind? What are my children going to remember of me? Yeah, they'll have lots and lots of shares in this company that's worth millions of dollars. Is that all I want to be remembered as, Akong, the rich guy? Or do I want to have put something in their heart that, you know, springs into the next generation and keeps giving? And I think that's a very powerful story. And we're seeing that we're seeing that. So in Community Foundation, where I serve, we help people set up their own family charities. And a lot of that comes from a place of, hey, now that I'm hedge fund managers, I've made so much money. I've got money coming out of my ears. And that's all great. I want to give some of it away. That's great too. How do I do it strategically? And how do I do it in a way which is going to teach my children, is going to inspire my kids, rather than have them grow up to be trust fund babies? You know,
you said no one should take a board seat because they want to shore up their reputation or feel like they're still important to the community.
Yes.
Serving as a board member is a service, not a life of privilege.
Yes.
But I remember you just told me that you weren't one of those girls who were carrying those tins around and you never raised money before. But did you always live the spirit of service?
Or? No, I didn't. Mm. To my shame, I didn't. And I guess I'm trying to make up for it now. I grew up at a time when you were told, study hard, work hard. And then I guess you sort of think, when I've made enough money, when I made enough money, then you can give back. Because right now, what do you have to give anyway? So that was my thinking. And then one day, after work, I was in the shower and I just heard a story about how one of the Filipino maids next door had to go back to her hometown because her kids called and they were crying and they said, Mommy, Daddy has moved a new woman into the house. And so she had to go back. She had a 15-year-old kid, a 9-year-old kid, and a 3-year-old kid, and their dad had just moved his mistress into the house.
Wow.
And I was in the shower, and I remember crying, thinking, my success as a professional and my happy family has been built on the backs and at the expense of these women. You know, many of whom are educated, but they just don't have those opportunities back in the Philippines or Indonesia where they come from. And that's when we decided as a firm that we were going to support migrant workers. We were going to help them, empower them in their rights. We were going to help support them in whatever way they needed, because that's where the need was. And so my firm, we give 10% of our partnership profits to charity causes, and we also do hands-on events. So that's what we started to do. We thought we would give a talk, we would befriend them. And now we take up their causes as well. My lawyers help them fight their cases so that employers don't take advantage of the foreigners, thinking that you can't afford to enforce your legal rights. So we try to do what we can, and we try to find causes which we feel are underserved. And very often it comes up in these sorts of private moments, you know, when it's just you, yourself, in the shower.
Yeah, you know? Completely. We're speaking with the incredibly inspirational Stephanie Yuen Teo. She helped set up law firm TSMP in 1998. You've been described as a super connected juggernaut.
Yeah, by people who know long, long words.
I wonder if you can help the women out there who are listening in, who want to know, Stephanie, what do I need to know as a woman who wants to ascend to a board?
Believe in yourself. There have been studies done, right? If an opportunity comes up in an organization, if a man feels he's about 50% able to do it, he will put up his hand because he'll think, yeah, I can do this. If a woman feels she can only do it to about 90%, she thinks, I've still got a 10% gap to go. I better not put up my hand. I will be shown to be the fraud that I am. So men have the Superman complex, women have imposter syndrome. And that's the gap we need to break.
Stephanie Yuen Teo, my very special guest. Now, I love that. I've done several shows on imposter syndrome. Even you know, as a woman who's achieved so much, do you sometimes feel that when something...
I feel that every second of every day. People look at me and they say, there's no way. And I'm like, you know, I was shy as a child. I'm still shy as a woman. You walk into a room and sometimes you put on the red lipstick and the red dress so that it hides what a freaking imposter you are. So you got to do it. But then you have to ask yourself, is it about you? Because does the world revolve around you, Steph? Or is it about what good you can do today? And let's put it this way. If you are as big an imposter as you think you are, if you can do a little bit of good and do something for somebody else today, then go out and do that.
The incredible Stephanie Yuen Teo in Influence Women on Boards. I'm Michelle Martin. We need a whole hour, Stephanie. Will you come back?
Next time.
Thank you so much.
It was lovely. Thank you very much.